Double click for recording. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, well, I think we'll go ahead and get started with our next presenter. Now that we have the lighting ready, we're going to be hearing from Christine Beyer from the University of Texas at Austin, who's presenting. Slightly different time.
It's slightly different. You weren't supposed to notice.
We use this implementing community involvement and collaborative language documentation, the Akito.
Good morning. I think it's still morning. This talk discusses the strategies used by the Akito Language Documentation Project, hereafter known as ILDP, to involve community members in the documentation and revitalization of Akito. As a multi-year, team-based, community participatory project, the ILDP was designed around a central goal: to involve members of the heritage language community in both documentation and revitalization work on Akito. The ILDP was designed to meet three broad objectives, which were documentation, revitalization, and revalorization of Akito, which the project's directors conceived of from the beginning as related but distinct objectives. So in this talk, I'll first describe some of the specific strategies used by the ILDP to meet this goal and these objectives, and then I will evaluate these strategies in terms of both their degree of success in the specific context of the ILDP and in terms of their potential replicability in other language documentation contexts. The Akito language, properly said, Akito, is highly endangered. There are about 25 remaining fluent native speakers, all over 60 years of age, and there are about 25 passive or partial speakers, all of whom are over 30. Akito is one of the three or four, depending who you ask, surviving languages of the Saparoan family, and I've listed them up here. The majority of the remaining speakers of Akito live in the community of San Antonio on the Pintuyacu River in the department of Loreto in Peru. A few live further upriver in Atalaya on the Chambira River. And you can see in the map here, so you can orient yourself spatially, Iquitos is the major city. San Antonio is about 100 miles west. I had to draw the river in, so it's not in exactly the right place. And then Atalaya is a little bit further up yet. Most of the 200 or so residents of San Antonio are of Akito descent, but many residents are mestizos, or Peruvians who don't identify themselves as indigenous, regardless of their bloodlines and cultural backgrounds. Most community members are subsistence farmers, and Spanish is the dominant language in San Antonio. Atalaya has about 150 or so residents, and it is roughly half ethnic Akito and half Quechua, and both Spanish and Quechua are actively spoken there. San Antonio is about 100 kilometers due west of Iquitos, which is the largest city in Peruvian Amazonia. And like many Amazonian groups, the Akito population was displaced and decimated in the course of contact with conquering outsiders. Now numbering fewer than 500 individuals, it is estimated there were as many as 10,000 Akito people at the time of the arrival of Europeans in Amazonia. So they took it hard. The Akito language is endangered as a result of intense pressure, including physical violence, on its speakers to stop speaking their native language and to start speaking Spanish. And in Amazonia, this is a centuries-old strategy to erase indigenous groups' social, economic, and political independence. As a result of this history, the roots of racism in the Akito case, both imposed racism and internalized, they run extremely deep. So the Akito Language Documentation Project was launched in 2001 as a response to a general request sent out by the leaders of San Antonio for help with their own language revitalization efforts. In very brief, my colleague Lev Michael and I, in our capacity as field workers for the nonprofit organization Cabecera Safe Project, learned about the Akito situation through connections in the region, and we decided to go visit and offer our services, and they accepted. And a lot of stuff ensued. The ILDP is a collaborative effort, not only among the the Quito community of San Antonio and Cabeceras, but also the Center for Indigenous Languages of Latin America at the University of Texas at Austin, the Centro de Investigaciones en la Lingüística Aplicada at the Universidad Nacional Mayor de San Marcos in Lima, and of course a host of individual researchers, most of whom have been linguistics graduate students from either UT Austin or San Marcos. Linguistic fieldwork began in 2002, and from 2003 to 2006, the ILDP was working with funding from the Hans Rausing Endangered Languages Program. We've received funding from other sources as well. From 2003 to 2006, the ILDP had local team members working part-time year-round on language documentation activities. Then for the 2 months of the North American academic summer, so mid-June and mid-August, the local team worked intensively, like 6 to 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, well, us, not them, with a group of visiting linguists, including Lev, seen in the picture, and myself as coordinators of the field team. And it was by design that the ILDP was active in the summer months only, prior to and after the period of 2003 to 2006. And by its conclusion, the ILDP will have produced the following materials, all of which are in some state of realization already: an Iquito Spanish Dictionary, a descriptive grammar of Iquito, an extensive collection of audio, video, and written texts encompassing a wide variety of textual styles, and a set of pedagogical materials for use in and by the community, and particularly in the bilingual school. On your handout, I've included a couple of axiomatic things for the coordinators that I'm not going to run through because they won't surprise you, I hope. The ILDP was structured to involve community members at two levels, as individual participants and then as a community at large, so as a social and political entity. And individuals and groups have very different characteristics. In concrete terms, the ILDP involved community members in four quite different kinds of social spaces. So they were members of the team, and community members were participating paid members of the linguistics research team, the linguistic documentation team. People were involved at the Iquito Language Center, which you can see in the picture here. And in that center, primarily, we offered spoken Iquito classes for adults and children in a variety of ways and a variety of times over the life of the project. In addition, in the school, the community's bilingual school, the ILDP provided both teaching support and pedagogical materials for the classrooms of the existing bilingual school, the national school. And then finally, community members were involved at the level of the village. And a large part of that was that the project had a high level of accountability to community assemblies. And also the ILDP team members were willing to and expected to participate in a wide range of communal events, meetings, celebrations, and stuff like that. So to outline a little bit some of the strategies that we used, specific strategies for involving the community of San Antonio at large. In 2001, after careful negotiations with the community at large, Lev and I, on behalf of Cabeceras and San Antonio's leaders, signed a formal agreement governing a multi-year recuperation project. And they chose that word in Spanish, recuperación, which is nice because it sort of covers revitalization and revalorization. In English, people conceive of recuperación as a more broad thing. And that agreement foregrounded community involvement in the project in a variety of ways. First, it placed us visiting participants in a supporting role to the community's revalorization efforts, and it served as the project's guiding document throughout the development and evolution of the project. The agreement also established a supervisory committee of community members for the project, and those members were chosen at a public meeting in 2002. Similarly, the community members who became actual team participants were selected by vote in a public meeting in 2002 in the community. The agreement committed the project's coordinators to making regular reports on the project's activities and advances to the community assemblies, which most of the time happen once a month in the community. And lastly, the agreement stipulated that the project's products would include pedagogical and textual materials tailored for local use, particularly in the school, but with a lot of room for community members to specify exactly what they wanted. In 2002, the project constructed the solar-powered Iquito Language Center that you saw a few slides ago and began offering spoken Iquito lessons for adults and children there. And we were learning as they were learning. We would do a bunch of stuff in the day and learn it and then teach them stuff in the evenings. And it worked out really well in the early years of the project. The classes were very well attended. And I lost my place. There we go. And then, of course, we also offered instruction and focused one-on-one instruction as necessary to the ethnic Iquito school teachers working in the bilingual school. And then finally, as well, between 2004 and 2006, the community linguists and language specialists, who I'm about to describe to you, regularly provided assistance to the teachers in the classrooms of the school. Now a few words about the specific strategies we used for involving individual members of the Iquito community. A significant challenge that the ILDP faced was the fact that no speakers of Iquito are literate, and no literate members of the ethnic Iquito community are native fluent speakers of the language. But the project addressed this fact by incorporating literate adults as community linguists, we call them lingüistas de la comunidad, and fluent native speakers of Iquito as language specialists, who were called los especialistas. And the project began with three and then reduced to two community linguists since 2003 till now, and has always had four language specialists. Now, these two local groups have worked as close collaborators throughout the project. And in particular, they were working in pairs and trios from the very first days of the project in order to develop camaraderie, stability, and expertise within that local team. All of the community participants were paid a respectable hourly wage for their work. This arrangement both increased their prestige in the community, because they had good, steady work, and it provided a tangible motivation to them to keep a consistent work schedule. And at the outset, the long-term goal of making this sort of two-part, heavily locally-based structure was to create a group of independent local experts who could serve the Iquito heritage language community beyond the life of the ILDP, however it turns out to last. Just a few words about the community linguists. In 2002 and 2003, the visiting linguists, as we were called, and that would be the people from UT Austin for the most part, we trained the community linguists in the basics of linguistic description, so including aspects, Iquito-relevant aspects of orthography, design, phonology, morphology, and syntax, aspects of text translation and transcription, should have said that in opposite order, and, for example, discussing recording protocols, how to do interlinearization, and how to do structured consultation on a text with that text's author. And then, of course, a lot of nuts and bolts stuff about lexicography for building a dictionary. The community linguists were active participants in the research process throughout the life of the project. They were suggesting topics and themes and strategies for the whole team to use in our language documentation work. And they provided a very important link between the visiting linguists and the community at large. They made concrete decisions about orthography and other aspects of language policy, as well as playing an active role in language teaching and in the design of pedagogical materials. For their part, the language specialists were chosen by the community and therefore were publicly acknowledged by everyone as the true primary experts on the Iquito language. Everyone sort of was assumed to know less than they. The language specialists basically received on-the-job training from the visiting linguists, and in that way, we could cultivate each specialist's individual talents and skills relative to the various types of documentary and descriptive tasks of the project. The language specialists guided the rest of the team to a large degree in selecting and producing content for the textual and the pedagogical materials. And the language specialists have worked with both community and visiting linguists in a sort of a master-apprentice context. And I would refer you to Leanne Hinton's wonderful book on how to keep your language alive, so that linguists, community linguists, and visiting linguists alike were seen to be participating actively in the revitalization of the language as a spoken language. So let me say a few words about some of the unexpected challenges encountered by the strategies I've just outlined. To our great surprise, the greatest challenge was maintaining local participants' long-term commitments to documentation and revitalization outside the context of the ILDP itself. I apologize that I'm shivering. As the work became more difficult and the project's funding decreased, community-level interest, so community at large as well as in some personal cases, waned. And the reasons behind this are very complicated and involve economic, culture, and political factors, so I'm not going to explain them at the moment. If you're curious, ask me later. In addition, the project supervisory committee as such didn't really work. We found that the diffusion of responsibility among a large group conflicted with the community's pre-existing habits of governance by a very small number of leaders. So as a result, the project structure was modified, sort of a mid-course correction that we made, so that there was a single supervisor selected by the community who was accountable to the community assemblies. In addition, year-round self-governance by the local team was not quite in accord with the expectations that the team as a whole agreed upon at the outset, and concretely speaking, a fixed weekly work schedule did not fit particularly well with the community linguists and language specialists' pre-existing daily, weekly, and monthly schedules and cycles. It just was a very different way for them of living and working. And another thing is that the low level of literacy that the community linguists brought to the ILDP became a serious obstacle as the difficulty of their work increased. These were smart people. They just didn't have a lot to work with from the education that they'd gotten. As a result, the basic levels of analytical skills they brought to the project were really quite a bit lower than we anticipated when we planned their training program. So as a result, a lot of the sort of detailed documentation work that they did had to either be closely edited or in some cases kind of done over. On a lighter note, let's discuss some of the concrete successes of the strategies I've outlined here. First, combining the talents and skills of the community linguists and the language specialists was immensely fruitful. They made significant contributions to the project based on their deep local knowledge, and they made contributions that the visiting team members simply could never have made. This is especially evident in the breadth and depth of the contents of our dictionary, the Iquito Spanish Dictionary, which is more like a cultural encyclopedia than a dictionary. Also, the year-round work of the local team had a startling positive impact on the fluency and artistry of the language specialists' use of their once little-used native language. For several decades, Iquito was rarely heard in public spaces, but as part of the ILDP, it is spoken daily. And similarly, sort of consequentially, the frequency and kinds of use of Iquito in San Antonio more generally have increased overall due to the language specialist's social influence. Because of the highly explicit nature of the original signed agreement, also, we found that overall expectations and participants' responsibilities remained fairly clear throughout the life of the project. We were able to rely on this document, and it guided and simplified the points of renegotiation that were inevitably necessary. For example, when the project's governance structure had to shift from a supervisory committee of 12, I think it was, to a single supervisor in 2004. Having community members work year-round on language documentation helped to maintain the vitality of the project both socially and politically over the years. Similarly, many aspects of the ILDP, including its elaborate structure and governing documents, the fact of the language center and the specialized equipment in it, the steady wages earned by the local participants, and also the central importance of the language specialists to this international project, as people like to call it, these things all elevated the prestige of the language and its speakers. And that hasn't waned. which is cool. Not surprisingly, of course, the year-round work of the local team made a substantial contribution to the number, size, and kinds of texts in the collection that the project is producing. And then also the presence of the Akito language in the classrooms of the community's national school has both increased and improved as a result of the project's activities. And this led to a key shift in the valence for a lot of the younger ethnic Akito kids of knowing some Akito from that being sort of a negative thing to being a positive thing. And when they're little, that's really nice to see. So let me just conclude with a few recommendations. Clearly, many aspects of the ILDP were and are uniquely context-dependent, inseparably bound to the project's specific participants and circumstances. Nonetheless, many of these strategies could be tailored to fit language documentation efforts in a variety of places and contexts. Lev and I ourselves plan to implement many aspects of this model in our next language documentation project. So let me give you just a few pointed recommendations. First, take the time to negotiate a mutually satisfactory, relatively binding agreement with the community at large at the outset of the project. Take especial care to enumerate community goals and visiting research goals as related but distinct sets. An initial formal agreement will allow for consistent measures of the successes of your project, while providing crucial guidance for all involved parties when mid-course corrections to the project's structures and activities become necessary. Also produce as many guiding and governing documents as necessary, written in locally appropriate language and directed to community members, in order to make the project structures, expectations, and commitments of all parties clear to everyone, including yourself. Then check back in with these documents periodically as the project's participants' experience, understandings, and expectations evolve over the life of the project. Study and understand well the interests and skill sets of local participants so that you can both play up their strengths and address their weaknesses. For example, next time we will increase both the quantity and the duration of the training community participants receive over the life of the project. In addition, we will rely more heavily on the apprenticeship relationships between the participants with different levels of training. Similarly, project government structures in our next project will be a lot more like the already functioning structures in the community. Incorporate visiting coordinators or supervisors at regular intervals during the year-round phases of the project. Bring to the project as many templates for your projected materials as you possibly can. And present materials of some kind to the community at large at the end of every field season, including even the first one, even if the materials are of modest size or in draft form. By doing this, you provide a tangible demonstration of your commitment to language revitalization and revalorization in the heritage language community. Centuries-old processes of language assassination are a formidable opponent in language revitalization work. Nonetheless, even under such conditions, community participatory language documentation can be done, and lasting language revalorization is possible to some degree, especially in the hearts of the remaining speakers themselves. Recognizing that community goals and visiting linguists or language activists' goals are overlapping but distinct sets is crucial in measuring the successes of a project like the ILDP and is key to establishing reasonable expectations among all participants. Finally, prioritizing the involvement of community members in language description is not the best method for obtaining clean linguistic data quickly. It just isn't. But community members' active participation does provide unparalleled richness and depth in language documentation and description, while at the same time making a substantial and concrete contribution toward revalorizing the language in both social and political terms. If you'd like to hear a little bit more about the ILDP and some of its strategies, I encourage you to attend Lev Michael's talk tomorrow. And if you want more information, including access to some of our products and governing documents, there's a website listed here and on the handout. Thank you for your attention.
So we're a little behind because we started late with the talk going over this morning. Let's go ahead and take about 5 minutes for questions, and I'll let you field them.
Yes. Tania Granadillo from the University of Western Ontario. You said that you were paying the team members, and were you paying them all year round? And if so, how were you managing the funds and the distribution of the money when you weren't there? Because that's something that I always have a problem with.
It was something of a logistical nightmare. Nonetheless, it was worth it. We paid people for every hour they worked, whether we were there or not. Fortunately, we had a very trustworthy, competent colleague in Iquitos, where there are banks, and he managed the paying of people, their wages on a monthly basis. And people would go collect their wages monthly or every other month or whatever. It was tricky, and we had to sort of massage the accountability systems of the project over the course of, you know, of establishing it. But for the most part, we felt that it worked out well. And the basic point, which is you work with us, you get money, that sort of pretty much kept things working at a sufficient. I mean, it was a hassle, but it was worth it. So we can talk more details later if you want.
Sure.
I'm interested in your observation that the community participation and the enthusiasm for the process waned over the course of the project. That's something that I'm familiar with in other situations, too. And the other thing that I was interested in was that you offered training to the bilingual teachers, but it was not accepted. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, and if you have any recommendations for maintaining community enthusiasm.
Sure. How can I put this in the most succinct way? What people thought they were getting didn't turn out to be exactly what they were getting. It was a lot harder and slower and less sexy and less profitable than most people expected. And there's no way for people to know that really until they get into it. There was a lot of politics and status involved as well in terms of how indigenous do you want to be so it's advantageous? But you don't want to be too indigenous because then it starts being disadvantageous. I mean, the politics of this sort of thing in this part of the Amazon basin are extremely tricky. We were very disappointed in the school teachers because they were very vociferous in getting us to come there because it validated them as bilingual. I mean, these are young men who don't speak Iquito and they're being paid as bilingual teachers. So we thought, well, we'll teach them some stuff, and they said they wanted it. But then when it came right down to it, we weren't going to pay them to learn to do the job they'd already been hired for. We didn't pay the teachers to take lessons in Iquito from us. So I guess in a strange way, we didn't. Those were some local participants that we didn't pay, but we didn't pay people to come to the classes either, the kids and adults. So that's why I re-emphasize over and over again, laying out, visiting people's expectations and local people's expectations, because what the community wanted and what they thought they were going to get from us just didn't turn out to be what they were imagining. They were thinking that people might start paying them to speak Iquito or something. I think just trying to read from people's the kinds of disappointments they expressed. So there was nothing we could do to make the community at large care more. But at the individual level, for the most part, and also sort of in regional flows of status and prestige, things really did improve. And the materials, I mean, sort of glancing off of Himmelman's talk, the materials are there, and they're continuing to be produced. And so maybe if people get a second wind of enthusiasm, because some of the younger kids thought this was really cool, then they're there to do more of this later. So I don't think that this is the final word on the situation at all. And so I should maybe describe it more as an ebb and flow process. And hopefully, even maybe, you know, in the future, the school teachers will decide that they really want to know more. So that was a very helpful answer, but it was honest.
Very interesting.
Well, it looks like perhaps this discussion can continue over lunch and let Michael's talk tomorrow. So thank you very much.
Thank you. still there are a couple more handouts if there weren't enough.